Every Friday at this time, we bring you the Federal News Countdown. Two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are the three most important to people who work for the government. Rank them in order from number three to number one, and we count them down on the Federal News Countdown. And I am very pleased this week to welcome somebody back who's been on a number of times before and a brand new voice to the Federal News Countdown. The new guy is Jeff Cook, who is associate partner in the Global Business Services for IBM. It's great to see you, Jeff. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Francis. Thanks for having me in.
You've chosen three great stories for your first time out, so congratulations on that. We'll dig into them here in just a minute. And Molly O'Neill of CGI Federal is a veteran of the show. It's good to see you again. You've been traveling a lot this summer, haven't you?
In and out.
Yeah.
Not normal.
All right. Well, I'm glad we found a time when you're here, and very happy to have you back on the Countdown this week. We start with, of course, and the third most important federal story is chosen by Molly O'Neill from Information Week. The headline is NIST tests ways to secure iPhones and iPads. NIST buying about 60 pieces and testing them out. But, I mean, is this a test in the truest sense of the form, Molly? Or is this just kind of a prelude to these things being able to go live?
Well, I think it's both. And I think that agencies are already using these in some manner, whether they're calling them in test mode or not. And one of the reasons I selected this story is because I think this is an important story. Over the past couple of years, the federal government has really been trying to secure the existing laptops, desktops, and they were and even laptops over the past, I don't know, Jeff, you know this, but for the past 8 years, a sort of a slow rollout of BlackBerries and laptops. And so the security around them was important. So we, slowly worked towards encryption, making sure that they're secure.
Yeah, a lot of times you had to justify why do you need a BlackBerry or why do you need a laptop. It was not expected that you would need that sort of mobility as a Fed.
Or to have it secure. And what I'm seeing on the sort of the iPhone and iPad craze right now, which makes sense because everything's going mobile, is there's a real quick want and need to adoption. And so the concern there is, are we making sure that those are secure like we have some of the other tools that we've got in place? And so there's this real demand to get them out there really quick. But at the same point, there's been this methodical look at the existing infrastructure that we have. So how are we going to make sure that this new demand and these new tools are actually secure from threats?
But these particular devices are in such demand that there's not really a way to hold this back or delay it,
no,
is there?
People
are just really figuring out ways to do it themselves regardless of the security, it seems.
Exactly. If you think about most of the government has been on, a Microsoft platform, which is why it became very vulnerable. One of the reasons it became really vulnerable. If everyone's using it, then you've got one way, sort of one thing to attack. And so that's why the standard federal desktop configuration was put out there to make sure everyone was doing the same thing. We secured everything the right way. And now we've got different operating systems, whether they're, Apple's operating system or Android's. And so it just means that we have to be just as thorough with these new operating systems. And let's not forget, especially because they're moving out faster.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the Apple operating system has proven to be secure. It's performed well, in general, anecdotally. And part of the reason for that is, underlying the Apple operating system is BSD, the Unix-like operating system that operates a lot of web servers around the world. So it's built on a solid foundation. Apple put the usability layer on top of the BSD operating system.
But people thought that about Android, too, and we're seeing that Android now, the number of potential threats to Android is just going through the roof. Same thing possible with the iOS, do you think?
Well, you can choose to download an insecure application and put it on top of a secure platform. I mean, you can write your password and put it on a Post-it note on the front of your computer. That's insecure, too.
I've done that, I'm sorry to say. Not a good
idea.
You're
supposed to put it inside your top desk drawer.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Molly O'Neill, story number three in the Countdown is from Information Week. The headline is NIST tests ways to secure iPhones and iPads. Jeff, your story number three is headlined Transparency Enforcer in New Oversight Role. It's Jack Moore's story from federalnewsradio.com about the formation of the Government Accountability and Transparency Board. And Earl Devaney told me this week that there are similarities between what the RAT board did and his leadership role there and what this new GATT board will do, but there are some differences too.
Well, and the RAT board came out as a result of the Recovery Act. The Recovery Act had an enormous amount of money going out through grants and loans and other programs, and it would have overwhelmed the ability of a lot of agencies and agency IGs to adequately oversee those funds. So the Congress wisely put an oversight mechanism in there, basically added additional oversight to oversee all these revenues. Now we're talking about a board that's going to be more independent and going to be operating on a more day-to-day basis with these agencies. Going to become permanent. I think we'll see a lot more news about this board and about the proposal on Capitol Hill to make this an independent agency. It almost becomes like a second GAO. I mean, imagine if this agency has the level or detail of oversight the GAO did. If every time you read a story about GAO, you also read a story about this new GATT board. I think we could see, you know, a great deal of work by this group.
And it makes sense. I mean, if you think about what the RAT board was able to do, the transparency associated with all of the stimulus money, I think, is pretty unprecedented. I mean, the ability to actually find money and stop checks from being, you know, written because of all the analytics and all the work that the Recovery Board operations have done through the direction of the RAT board and everything else. I mean, it's a real model. I mean, typically in today's world, if you think about how audit and everything is done, 2 years later, after we've written checks and we've paid people who get grants or contracts, and we find out that they're either not performing or they didn't do it, or they're, you know, heaven forbid, they're on the list that they can't, not mm-hmm. supposed to be doing federal work, it's too late. And so I think it's really turned things around.
Yeah, the only thing this might do, I think, is make the agencies look worse, potentially, either the agencies or the IG's offices at the agencies, because it'll be another opportunity for Congress, if it works like the RAT board does, to say, well, why didn't you figure this out before this board was had to come along and do all of this?
And maybe that presents then an opportunity, because right now the board is doing basically what the RAT board did, which is look for fraud. They're looking for transparency and looking for fraud. But an opportunity, I think, presents itself, and I think, Francis, you just got at it, which is if there's a grant for housing programs and that grant is fraudulently obtained, then that grant doesn't yield safe and affordable housing for families. But in the same way, I think if you lack performance, if the contractor fails to perform or fails to deliver that housing, it's the same net effect of not having safe for affordable housing. You know, fraud wastes money, but lack of performance would waste money as well. And mm-hmm. I think a challenge for this board would be not only to look for fraud, but to also help agencies to determine performance and what is actually accomplished with these monies. Not merely was the money stolen, but what was actually accomplished with it. When we did the Recovery Act, people knew what we were measuring. We were measuring jobs, and that was easy to measure, and it was universally accepted. You know, we're going to send this money out, and you're going to report to us on jobs. What are they going to report on now? I mean, now we're going to send money out, and now they need to determine what's the performance going to be. So I think that in addition to looking for fraud, to determine what is the performance measure that these recipients are going to report.
And I think, you know, also another comment on the sort of, well, what does that mean to the agencies? Is it going to make them look bad? The reality is you can make that statement anytime you make data available, whether it's in this context or something else. I think by putting it out there, making it transparent, it will force even agencies to think a little harder and to do a little bit more due diligence before they award something, to think about the performance measures. Mm-hmm. And so, but you can make that claim for any kind of data if you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Molly O'Neill commenting there. Jeff Cook's story number 3 in the Federal News Countdown this week is Jack Moore's federalnewsradio.com story, headline Transparency Enforcer in New Oversight Role. And you can read it linked up now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When the countdown continues, story number 2 of the week on the countdown from both Jeff and Molly, when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues.
The good. Government IT Solutions Spotlight is brought to you by CDWG.
The Treasury Department is moving to electronic invoicing and expects to save $7 million a year. Treasury will require all of its bureaus to use the new internet payment platform by the end of fiscal 2012. It will also mandate all of its vendors use the portal by 2013. The platform will speed up invoice processing time by 50% and reduce errors for both the agency and its vendors. The internet payment platform is part of a 12-initiative program to reform federal financial management.
If you're in federal IT, you know the pressure to maximize your agency's IT investment. Visit cdwg.com/datacenter to see how our experts have helped federal agencies virtualize, optimize, consolidate their data centers, and reduce ROI pressure. CDWG, people who get it.
Visit CDWG.com to learn how an end-to-end solution from Brocade can help your agency improve network agility and responsiveness.
Join host Michael Keegan next week for the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. What are the 7 management imperatives all government executives need to follow? What is FAA's next generation air transportation system? How is New York City shaping a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and more efficient? How is DOD improving its business operations? And what about power, security, and leadership in the 21st century? Tune into the Business of Government magazine next week and find out.
For over 80 years, Motorola has been committed to keeping Americans safe. Today, Motorola Solutions provides interoperable communication systems that are built to open standards so federal, state, and local agencies can work together in emergency situations and be their best in the moments that matter. That's why first responders and others dedicated to keeping citizens safe choose Motorola Solutions. Because they know Motorola Solutions always puts public safety first, just like they do. To learn more, visit MotorolaSolutions.com.
30 years of AIDS. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. It's been 30 years since the first published medical report on the disease we now know as HIV/AIDS. In that time, testing and treatment have developed to change prospects for the better for people who have the disease. Dr. Anthony Fauci is an institute director at the National Institutes of Health, and he has been an authority on HIV since its early days. Back then, patients might live only months. Fauci notes that antiretroviral drugs now can extend lives for decades, but he says there's still much left to do.
We are hoping that we might get a cure, and we also need to get to people who are infected, who don't know that they're infected, to get them into care and to put them on therapy.
Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. Former DOD Acquisition Chief Jock Gansler has written the book on how DOD can cope with the tight budget it's facing. He'll join us with his advice for the Pentagon. Plus, we'll talk to the curator of the NSA's Cryptology Museum, but they'll speak in plain English. Those stories and more Monday morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week features the 3 most important federal news stories of the week, as chosen by Molly O'Neill and chosen by Jeff Cook, and we're up to...
Number 2!
The second most important federal news story of the week for Jeff Cook is the GCN story at Black Hat Gathering, Passions Flow on the B-Side. And is it fair to call this the hacker convention? Is that really appropriate, Jeff?
I think they'd be pleased with that label. They and Black Hat is you know, a gathering of people who are in the industry, experts from across the spectrum. They probably try to portray themselves as being a little more evil than they really are. A lot of them work in respectable jobs, but it is a collection of smart people talking about smart things.
Mm-hmm. Why is this a good place for government people to be to try to make connections and develop relationships?
Well, it's entertaining. A few years ago, they used to play a game at Black Hat called Spot the Fed. And they would try to figure out who in the crowd was really a Fed. And now all of a sudden they've come full circle, and we saw stories that DARPA is funding some research out there. NSA is actively recruiting hackers out there. They've got a program at DEF CON for the kids to encourage them to think that cybersecurity is exciting and fun. So all of a sudden, cybersecurity is becoming, a family affair.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, probably the greatest impression that Melissa Hathaway's left on me in the times that she's been on the show is saying somebody, maybe even the federal government, should develop like a Nintendo DS game or something like that about cybersecurity and solving cyber problems to try to develop. She has kids about the same age as my son, who's 11, to try to get them involved, and people should start to think in that way to encourage kids to follow the right kinds of tracks in schools to be able to become cyber professionals, because we're not generating enough the way it is now.
Karen Evans has got her program mm-hmm. going with that U.S. Cyber Challenge.
Yep.
She's been helping to promote. And I think we do have to, kids have a 100 interests when they're young. And I think, we all had one teacher that we can probably think back to that tickled an interest and maybe formed a lifelong direction for us. And I think this is a fairly overt opportunity to steer kids into this area. And I think having the feds go out to Black Hat to try to recruit and hire people, I mean, that's the Jesse James model. You go there because that's where the cybersecurity experts are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, I mean, the reality is, I mean, getting kids to get an interest and stay interested in science and technology as a whole is a challenge for the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can think about things for the future, and people, kids are interested in gaming, they're interested in, computers these days, it should be interesting to see if things change, in this, what I'll say, this newer next generation.
But I think the two stories that came out of Black Hat this week that are going to have real impact on us and we're going to see more of were the two stories. The one was about the demonstrations of the vulnerabilities of the Siemens industrial controllers. These were the same controllers that were spinning the centrifuges for the Iranian uranium purification. And people now have taken an interest and begun looking at those and found that they are shot full of holes. There's a paper being presented at Black Hat that talks about 18 security violations in these controllers, one of which is a administrator password that's hardwired into the chip. So it's a permanent administrator password. The chips were developed without a network security mentality. The network layer on the chip has not been updated in decades. Even though we've seen security patches to Microsoft and others, these chips were built sort of like the early internet. The early internet was assumed that everybody was benevolent and it was built fairly accessible. And then all of a sudden, the internet became a less friendly place, and we all had to harden the internet.
Mm-hmm.
These cyber controllers the same way. Just as an anecdote for that, this fellow found an Easter egg, a little hidden program inside the controller, that when you executed it, displayed dancing monkeys. So obviously these things weren't built with security in mind. They were built assuming that they were going to be in a friendly environment. So while it may be, and they're embedded in everything, and the story on your website talked about that insulin pumps have these things and prisons have these things, and somebody postulated, well, what if you attacked a prison? Could you just open all the cells? Nuclear power stations have these small industrial controllers. You probably have one in your thermostat at home. If your thermostat, they now have these remote controllable thermostats and microwave ovens. So it may be fun to be able to program your video recorder from work on your website, but do you really want somebody else to be able to do that?
I would like to be able to set some thermostats in my neighborhood at either 60 or 90 from time to time. But that depends on when people do their lawn mowing.
Well, that's true. But let's say that I'm Vlad the Hacker, and I all of a sudden decide to turn on every air conditioner in Washington, D.C. simultaneously and crash the power grid. And then while the power grid's down, I'm going to go rob a bank or something. So the convenience is there, but I wonder if we're getting to a point, it'd be like a science fiction show where we assume that every network computer is compromised, like Terminator mm-hmm. or Battlestar Galactica, where you have an innate suspicion of anything that's a computer because it might it might be somebody else controlling it.
Jeffrey Cook, story number two on the Federal News Countdown this week is from GCN. The headline is At Black Hat Gathering, Passions Flow on the B Side. And you can learn more about that and read the whole story at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Molly O'Neill's story number two when the Federal News Countdown continues in just a moment.
Here's Gus Hunt, Chief Technology Officer, CIA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Emerging Technologies, sponsored by Informatica.
It's an environment that has radically shifted how we deliver capabilities from as a reactive world to a proactive world, where we can truly be agile, responsive, and actually, as a government, deliver what has emerged in the outside world as what we call frictionless IT.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Government leaders have one thing in common. They know data is their biggest asset, but that asset is growing exponentially. Data is expected to grow by as much as 44 times over the next year to a staggering 35.2 zettabytes. Welcome to the era of big data. How will your agency effectively process the volume of data to support missions, serve citizens, and provide the right information to the right individuals? Informatica helps government agencies to move, take in, and manage their data, regardless of how much, what kind, or where it is. Visit Informatica.com.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
One large federal agency says allowing tablet computers on its network won't just satisfy the demands of its workforce, it could also save money. The Department of Veterans Affairs plans to start allowing iPads to access the VA network this October, and eventually CIO Roger Baker thinks they could replace department-issued laptops. Since the tablets tend to be cheaper, they could bring down VA's overall IT costs. Baker says he wants to give VA employees a choice between an iPad and a laptop.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Welcome to today's lottery draw. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Stroke is this country's third most common cause of death. The blood clots that cause it might be attacked with a technique somewhat similar to one for treating kidney stones. Targeted waves of pressure are used to destroy kidney stones, and as you can clearly see when opening a soda bottle, pressure changes also form bubbles. So Andrew Seri, a mechanical engineer at the University of California in Berkeley, thinks the blood clots causing stroke might be cleared if
we send a strong, focused pressure wave through the skull to the place where the blood clot is.
The resulting bubbles don't have to break the clot apart, but in combination with drugs,
it's about loosening up the network of the blood clot so that the drug can penetrate more easily.
And refinements might even make the process so effective that it can be drug-free. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon Family Groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon.
From We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown, where each week two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are the three most important to people who work for the federal government, rank them in order from number three to number one, and we count them down on the Federal News Countdown. This week it's Jeff Cook from IBM and Molly O'Neill from CGI, both former federal officials and experts in the world of the federal government. And Molly O'Neill, your story number two is the New York Times story that turned everybody on, a lot of people who had never heard before of Stephen Van Roeckel, who is now going to be the next chief information officer of the federal government.
Absolutely. I think that's big news in the federal IT world. As everyone knows, Vivek Kundra is stepping down shortly here. And so this is the new, you know, champion for where federal IT is going. So this is big news. I think, you know, Vivek was a real a champion and leader in terms of innovation in government, and you know, set forth a fairly different and robust plan forward for federal CIOs to, you know, to deliver on, whether mm-hmm. it's, you know, cloud computing or the data center consolidation and things like that. And so this is the guy who's going to be, you know, filling those shoes. And so it's important to figure out, you know, is he going to, you know, keep the agenda, which I think sounds like things are going that direction. People will want to get to know him. People want to understand his leadership style, and it's big news in the federal government. What do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, absolutely. This is going to set the kind of tone and tenor moving forward, much as Vivek did. He came in. Steve Van Roeckel joins a very small club of these eGov administrators. We're up to he'll be to the fourth one now, mm-hmm. and so I think the opportunity to steer things from the top is going to be interesting. I think he faces a challenge though. To maintain the inertia that Vivek has built. You know, Vivek came in, set forth his agenda, but frankly, you know, the federal government is like a large ship, and it takes a little while to adjust the direction. It doesn't turn on a dime, and there's a danger here with the change in leadership that he focuses on keeping that inertia going forward and keeping a little pressure, either pressure or enabling agencies to maintain that forward direction.
Sure, and I think that, you know, the reality is when push comes to shove, it's really the federal agency CIOs that actually have to implement the policies and the direction that the administration has. Depending on how rooted things were in the agencies, I think will really be telling in terms of what really continues and what really moves and what all of a sudden that was, you know, in the level of we would love to do this and we're moving that direction, no longer is a priority for a lot of the reasons. Is it could be sort of ratcheting down the end of the administration. So, but there's budget issues now. We all heard about you know, data.gov and everything else there, and we've seen budgets.
Well, and Mr. Van Roeckel comes in at a great time for him. Agency budget submissions are going to be due probably about the first week of September. So he'll have an opportunity to come in, put his stamp on things, and then pass back to agencies will be in the Thanksgiving timeframe. Mm-hmm. So this is the time when you can, you know, working through the budgets and the budget process within OMB and providing those directions back to agencies, this is the time where somebody at OMB can have impact. I mean, this is the curtain up and the real time for OMB. He's got a very capable staff that can bring him in and get him, you know, briefed up and integrated into the way the OMB works.
I don't think anybody would argue that people were surprised across the government spectrum about his choice, because he didn't register anywhere. And I even communicated with one person who was a pretty close observer of the federal IT landscape to talk about coming on the show and talking about him. And this person said, I didn't even know his name before yesterday. So there are a lot of people out there, I think, who don't know anything about him. But is it surprising that the White House chose somebody who was that low profile to do this job? Or does that kind of fit? Does that kind of make sense based on what you are saying about the bulk of the work, Molly, being done at the agency level?
Well, quite frankly, I wasn't too surprised for a couple of reasons. You know, I'd heard a lot of names thrown about as well. Some of them were existing, you know, federal CIOs. And, you know, one strategy just says keep those strong federal CIOs in positions where that are actually going to be out there implementing and doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that, you know, boat has turned, then that's the direction things are going to go. But, you know, in some ways, while I give Vivek a lot of credit for his leadership and his vision, the reality is some of these things were going to happen regardless. If you think about, you know, everything from whether it was now or next year. And so I think the things, a lot of the things that are going on are things that, if you look at what's happening in the private sector, the government needs to follow suit in anyway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to come up with, like, data center consolidation, big landmark thing that's been in the news, and it's, you know, it was a priority for Vivek. That's something that if you look at costs and you look at the explosion of sort of the IT, the infrastructure footprint, just like any company, you know, government needs to be treated a little bit like a big growing company, right?
Yeah.
At some point, you got to ratchet down and say, okay, stop. Let's figure out, are we growing too far there? Have we sort of put our tentacles out too far, and how do we better manage this?
Mm-hmm.
So some of these things, I think, are well-rooted in terms of good business. But I wasn't too surprised. In some ways, it could have gone either way, simply because I think that maybe keeping those federal CIOs that are existing in some of those spots is probably the right thing for government, because that's where, you know, you have to have the implementation at this point to get through.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, is it fair to draw the conclusion that the selection of somebody like Mr. Van Roekel means that the White House is pretty happy with the course that at least the larger agencies are on with the CIOs that they have, and want them to continue to do that, don't want to interrupt it by making a move like that?
I think it... That's a fair assessment. I think another assessment would be that Mr. Van Roekel has obviously acquitted himself well in his prior roles. We were saying that he was low profile. Well, he was low profile up until about 48 hours ago,
mm-hmm.
and now he's high profile, and he's in a position of leadership here that's going to have good visibility and an opportunity to succeed. And I think he'll have an opportunity now on a much broader stage to demonstrate that. And like I say, I think Molly's exactly right. By being less disruptive, not moving people from within agencies, but finding talent outside, they have, I think, put a good course for success.
And let's not forget, there's a well-seasoned deputy in place now in Lisa Schlosser,
mm-hmm.
who's
mm-hmm.
served as a CIO in the federal government. Has her roots in both camps in terms of civilian and defense because of her background. So she brings a unique perspective to be able to, prepare him, for the role as well in terms mm-hmm. of being around the federal IT community for quite a bit.
She's been in that particular job, too, now for 3, 4, 5 months, something like that.
It probably seems that way to Lisa, but not that long.
Right.
I think about a month.
About a month.
Fair enough. Molly O'Neill's story number 2 in the countdown is from the New York Times, the original story that announced Steve Van Roekel was going to take over as the chief information officer for the federal government, replacing Vivek Kundra. When the Federal News Countdown continues, great minds think alike, and Jeff Cook will demonstrate that with his selection for story number 1 on the countdown this week. It's In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit matrixdirect.com.
Sometimes I worry about what would happen to my family if I lost my job. But I never really thought about what would happen to them if they lost me and I didn't have life insurance. My cousin's husband died, and now she might have to sell her house just to make ends meet. I don't ever want to put my wife through that. So I called Matrix Direct.
Hi, I'm Brent Langdon for Matrix Direct. We partnered with American General Life to find you their lowest rates on term life insurance products. If you're 40 years old and married, we could find you a $250,000 policy for less than $16 a month. Call now for a free, no obligation quote. 1-800-588-5514.
I feel so much better now that I called.
It only takes 5 minutes to see how you could save up to 70%. Call now. 1-800-588-5514. 1-800-588-5514.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Newsmakers talk to Emily Kopp.
Rob Shriver is Senior Policy Counsel at OPM.
The pathways are intended to create more clear, streamlined approaches. Internship programs, recent grad programs, and Presidential Management Fellowship programs. Agencies should be actively recruiting from all segments of society. These programs would be a helpful way for them to bring entry-level talent into their organizations.
Hear the entire interview online at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown this week with Jeff Cook from IBM and Molly O'Neill from CGI Federal, and we're up to
number one.
And Jeff, as a first timer on the countdown, kudos to you because you matched up telepathically, I guess, with Molly and her number two story of the week. Your number one is Federal News Radio's story on the new selection or the selection of the new federal CIO, Steve Van Roeckel. What the execution of what Vivek's already laid out, 25-point plan and all of that, seems to be what's going to be his main job over the next, whether it's 18 months or longer than that if the president's reelected. That's really what he's got to deal with now, right?
Absolutely. These projects, it takes 2 minutes to think them up, 10 minutes to write the memo, and 3 years to get them executed.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, well, we should consolidate data centers, That's fairly easy to conceptualize, but the actual moving of equipment and shutting things down is long term. I mean, you're dealing with everything from leased facilities and lead times on hardware to just some very difficult technical questions. It is hard to overstate just how many opportunities there are for problems in doing something as complicated as moving a data center. I mean, it's the IT equivalent of a heart transplant.
Mm-hmm. Are people treating it that way, though, when they talk about it, Molly? Because sometimes it sounds like the approach is a lot more basic than what Jeff's talking about.
Well, you may not be reading it in the headlines. I mean, I think, a lot of what you read in the media is this. It's glamorized, as Jeff is trying to say, we can close, 800 data centers by X, or we'll close 30 this year. But when it comes down to getting into the agencies, it's a little bit harder than that. Depending on the agency and depending on a lot whether these are big data centers or not, the work is really in all the details. And I'm not sure. The federal CIO has to understand that, obviously. And when we set goals, we need to understand that. I think the worst thing you want to do is be the CIO who does shuts down something and a business application goes down,
mm-hmm.
and someone doesn't get paid or mm-hmm. something like that happens. And so, there's a lot of risk that maybe even on the commercial side, commercial loses money, I guess. Government loses money too.
Right.
Or people lose pensions or things like that because you're busy moving, application survey doesn't go well and you're down for 2 days. So mm-hmm. those are significant things. They're things that hit the press. There are real challenges out there.
What are the potential landmines for somebody coming into a job like this? What are the things that are there, not that Vivek left, not that he's not capable of managing, but just the potential things that could go wrong that could happen to somebody when they step into a job like this?
Well, the one that's obvious is that we now have some budget pressures. Problems are easier to solve when you've got a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden we're making things harder. It's like running a race with ankle weights. And we're saying now you're going to transform and you're going to do it on less money. It's a complicating factor. And a lot of initiatives, the cost to transition to a lower cost model means a short-term higher cost. That is maybe one of the big difficulties. Another is the interagency nature of a lot of this. You have organizations which are fairly independent, and now you're asking them to work together toward goals, and that can be difficult as well.
Do you think a lot of people don't take into account the short-term higher costs that Jeff is talking about when it comes to implementing something? Because Vivek, it hammered over and over again, a lot of the reasons we're doing a lot of these things is they're going to save us money. And that's true long-term. But I think people forget that some big reform movements cost, there's a high upfront concentration of costs in order to realize the life cycle cost.
Yeah, that's the tricky part because you want to make sure that when you make the investment and you push things along, that you actually start collecting the savings and doing something with the savings. And so I'm not sure that people don't understand that. I'm just not quite sure that government itself is good at shutting things off and doing things. We may consolidate, but did we actually shut it down and move it and get rid of the lease and do everything else? Or are we now going to use that as a storage area? And so now it becomes something else. And next thing you know, it's a data center in 10 years, you know, because maybe the money came down and it came up and you never got all the savings you could from it. So, you know, I think there's some of that. But, you know, I want to get back to another statement you said earlier, Francis, which was, you know, a new guy comes in and he's got how many months left? I can't even remember now. 16 months?
Something like that.
Roughly. And you assume that. You're not going to assume another 4 years or after that. I mean, you're happy if you get that. But, you know, one of the traps you get into, you know, when you're a political spot like that, to say, do I want to – I understand what the where the administration is going, but where do I want to put my stamp on it? And I think he needs to be really careful to say, what are the, you know, things that I can bite off on and really achieve rather than going too broad? You know, what is it in here that is really going to leave my mark now? And he's going to start thinking about those things. But, you know, can't go too broad, otherwise nothing will get done. Mm-hmm. And people get set on a tangent. And do I want to stay the course and really focus on these areas? Or is there something else I thought was missing but still is in line with what the administration's goals are?
No, I think that's right. I think if you can narrow the playing field and have fewer targets, I mean, Vivek has a finite number of initiatives here on data centers, on his three, the cloud and the cloud computing, transparency, and then he had the kind of the late-breaking one on websites and website reducing the number of URLs and websites out there. You know, if you could accomplish a couple of those well, you would have definitely made a mark. I mean, that's you don't have to go, you don't have to bat 100% to be a star.
Yeah, well,
and I think that's what if I were him, and I, you know, he sounds like a, like you say, he's had a couple spots in government, even though he's not well known. But, you know, that's advice I would give to him.
Just pick a couple and make sure those get done well and completed. I mean, that seems to me to be the bet. If you can close out some of these things that Vivek started, that's a great way to make it
work.
Well,
that was kind of Karen Evans' strength. When she came in, there were a limited number of initiatives that had gotten started, and she came in and just kept working with agencies and was fairly collaborative with them and said, okay, here's where we're going to go. Give me your plan. And followed up on those plans and kept promises and enabled people. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of this, you know, management and government can transcend politics. It doesn't have to be. It's not a political issue whether the government should be well managed or not. And so I think this is an opportunity to accomplish things even in the shadow of an upcoming election.
Jeff Cook's story number one on the Federal News Countdown this week is from Federal News Radio. It's Jason Miller's story about the selection of Steve Van Roeckel to become the next chief information officer for the federal government. It's linked up now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Molly O'Neill's story number one will close out this week's Federal News Countdown when In Depth with Francis Rose continues.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
Attention all military, active duty, retired, and all authorized family members. Your Quantico Marine Corps Base Commissary is on the road and bringing your hard-earned commissary benefit directly to you. This on-site sale will take place at Fort AP Hill, August 18th and 19th. Come out and experience savings that average more than 30% on all your groceries. For more information, visit commissaries.com. And remember, your commissary, it's worth the trip.
Coming to the Reagan Building, the first vendor-neutral predictive analytics conference for the government. Predictive Analytics World, September 12th and 13th. PAWGov.com. Featuring keynotes from Congressman Darrell Issa and Chairman of the Recovery Board Earl Devaney, along with case studies from government agencies.
this September at the Reagan Building. Learn more at pawgov.com. That's pawgov.com.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Can you find anything on the Internet? Well, I'm sure you can, but don't take my word for it. Just ask this talking dog who can only say, I love you. Roll the clip. One more time, talking dog.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
This is the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And this week, I don't think any Federal News Countdown would be complete without a story about the debt limit deal. And Molly O'Neill's story number one is that story. The headline from the Washington Post: White House and congressional leaders reach debt limit deal. I'm going to have Mike Causey on the show later on, and we're going to talk about the fact that even with this deal, even with the FAA deal that the president signed today, still nobody really knows what's going on, do they? I mean, do we really have any indication of where things are headed?
Right. So my alternate title to this is The Calm Before the Storm.
Uh-huh.
Because while it's great that we had that done and it took a long time to get the debt ceiling squared away, we don't know where the spending cuts are going to come from right now. And so, you know, you put your federal hat on, and for those of us who've worked in the federal government before, right, Jeff,
mm-hmm.
we know that when it comes to budgets of the past couple – when was the last – I can't remember the last time we had a budget in place on time. Appropriation in place. And so I can only imagine the fights are in the lobbying for money for programs and everything else is just about to start, and mm-hmm. it's starting late. And this is going to cause a lot of, you know, angst within the agencies, trying to figure out protection mode, trying to figure out, you know, are they going to have 18 continuing resolutions again? It stifles some of the work. So this is, you know, while it's great news, that's behind. There's still a lot of work ahead, and I really think that's the byline here, or the subtext here.
The political reality of it is, Jeff, we're going to get Congress back right after Labor Day. So we're almost bound to see continuing resolutions, because there's no way they're going to get all those. They don't have any done. So there's no way they're going to get any of those done, I wouldn't think, with the political climate the way it is, in 3 weeks.
Oh,
so
absolutely.
Here we go again.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, there will be continuing resolutions. The question is, you know, are the continuing resolutions fairly harmonious and they push into, say, a November time frame? And we get a budget, you know, typically it's not unusual to see the budget come out sometime, or the appropriations come out first week in December. You know, everybody, we sit and have meetings and discussions, you know, until Thanksgiving break. People come back from Thanksgiving break. They've got a week or so in there, and then they pass the appropriations. That would be fairly normal. If we get if Congress gets into trouble and they start pushing into January or later in the spring, you know, that A, is a lot of acrimony on Capitol Hill, but B, from a management standpoint at these agencies, it does, as Molly said, bring a lot of things to a screeching halt. You know, the initiative that you're trying to launch, or the contract you're trying to let, is on hold until the appropriation is in place.
And we've seen a lot of that already this year, you know, anticipating what was coming. And that was, you know, I think for the past 2 years, we've seen, at least in the last year, we've seen what I'll say, you know, savings and budget savings around sort of more on the administrative cost side, around, you know, where there is savings to be had, and there'll be continue to be savings to be had. But now we're talking big So we're talking, we're down deep into the program budgets, you know, major things. So these are tougher battles ahead in many, many ways.
Now, of course, the 12-person commission is going to be sort of removed from that appropriations battle. So that'll be a sideline show. And maybe
I'm sure no lobbyists will be able to reach them or their staff at all, right?
Probably not, no.
Oh, no. They'll be well protected from that. And I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings, but then if we're talking, just say your example, one of your examples, Jeff, comes true, and we're looking at finally getting appropriations done in, say, January or February. We're then into 2012 presidential campaign season, and in addition to a third of the Senate and all of the House being up for reelection, and 2012 has the potential to look just as ugly or uglier than what we've already seen this year, doesn't it?
Well, that's true. But I think to their credit, I mean, the career staff, the administration, will hold themselves to a large extent above that political fray. And I think, you know, to be successful, the appropriations is something that will bind them. But other than that, they should not be tossed too much by the waves, I think.
Molly O'Neill's story number one of the countdown is the I didn't put a quota in for a debt limit story, but you met it anyway, I appreciate that. Very nicely done. The story is White House and congressional leaders reach debt limit deal. It's a Washington Post story about that deal, and you can find it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Fantastic job as always, Molly. Jeff, a terrific first effort on the Federal News Countdown. We'd love to have you come back and do
Absolutely.
It again sometime.
Absolutely.
And, of course,
you.
Molly, you'll do a return engagement, I hope.
Yeah, thank you, Francis.
Happy to have both of you.